Okay, some of your comments here. Hi, Greg. Should the government take some responsibility for all of the arson attacks? Well, I mean, arson and the destruction of property is a very serious crime against another person's property and stuff they own. And you can face a life sentence up for it. I mean, where does that argument end? So if I'm frustrated with the government's policies and I believe that they're responsible for the cost of living crisis, do I go across the road and fill my car with petrol and drive off? Do I break into someone's house and take their stuff if I think they've got more than me and they're being looked after more by the government? I mean, you go down that route, where does it end? You know? I wish the councils had done these buildings up years ago, hundreds of them, and put them to a good use. This burning of buildings would not be happening. Thank you, Mary. I think the number fell for Sinn Féin and others because people are thinking maybe more in independent farmers' parties, etc. Every action has a reaction. There's no doubt about that. Good morning, Greg. We've snow here in Stranorlar. That comes in from a daily listener. Thank you so much indeed. Hopefully, Stranorlar is always an area where things start to settle, perhaps before other areas in the county. County councillors have no real say in anything, believes this listener. The council executive calls the shots beyond filling potholes and deciding property tax rate. A caller believes it's a waste of taxpayers' money, but even the executive of the council doesn't necessarily have the power in relation to the new planning situation. Hi, Greg. How are AIM2 doing in the polls? Great alternative to other parties. If Maria Walsh refers to pale meaning white skin, then that is racist, she believes, or this person believes. AIM2 are... have been announcing candidates from really quite diverse backgrounds as well. So a lot of people will go, well, we'll see that as a positive. And the world we live in now, some might even see that as a negative. 086 60 25000 is the WhatsApp and text number, or give us a call on 07491 25000. Right, Alana Kerrigan joins us on the show now. Good morning, Alana.
Good morning, Greg.
Nice to speak to you. Now, you have been publishing on your Instagram about your recent experience of a home birth. You opted for a home birth, and more specifically a water birth. Is that correct? And if so, well, it is correct because I know I've read it. Why did you, Alana?
Well, this is my third baby, Greg, and with the first two, I was induced. I went into hospital and had an induced labour in the labour ward. And I thought that was what I had to do because I'm someone who is prone to developing gestational diabetes. And I always wanted a water birth, but because of the diabetes and because of being induced, it was not an option that was available to me in the hospital. So when I got pregnant for the third time, I was researching how could I have a water birth. I really wanted to do it, and I was just told that it wasn't an option for me. So the only way I could do that was by looking into home birth, your baby at home, and also you're then in control of the environment, and you can choose if you want to have a water birth or whatever other kind of birth, whatever preferences you want put in place. I had probably not a great experience with my first birth in the hospital, and that left a wee bit of birth trauma as well. So I felt much more confident then, giving birth at home and being, as I say, in control of the environment and feeling like that wee bit more autonomy over the circumstances.
And did you go full term with your third child, or because of the diabetes in pregnancy, was the baby induced?
So no, you can't actually be induced at home currently, in my trust area anyway. So I went overdue, which was a new experience for me. With the other two, I was induced at 39 weeks. And this time around, I had a home birth rota, which started at 37 weeks. Mm-hmm. So what that means is from 37 weeks, there were midwives on call to come to my home anytime. And that went up to 41 weeks, but unfortunately I went overdue beyond that. I went to 41 weeks and 2 days. So I had to request that rota be extended. And let me tell you, the 9 days that I went overdue felt as long as the 9 months that I was pregnant. I have a whole new appreciation. It was honestly, it was really stressful because I think I knew that the hospital and the consultant would start to put pressure on me as well. If I went too far overdue, they'd start to pressure me.
Well, that was
coming in and having an induction.
Because obviously, if I'm correct with the diabetes and pregnancy. You know, as soon as you have the baby, that your blood levels return to normal. Is that the case with you?
Yeah, they okay, do. So the gestational diabetes, yeah.
Yeah, so did they advise you that, you know, really by going full term, and in your case 9 days over, that sort of potentially increased any risk with you with the diabetes or even to your unborn baby?
The risk to myself is the same. With gestational diabetes, it's all linked to the placenta. Mm-hmm. So once you deliver the placenta, the impact of the hormones on your insulin resistance are basically gone right away. The risks that they are worried about are obviously risks to the baby. I was very lucky in that every time with my gestational diabetes, it was diet controlled. I never had to go on any medication. I was able to manage my blood sugar levels just by watching what I was eating. And the research that I had done indicated to me that if your diabetes in pregnancy is well managed, then the risks to the baby that normally are present, they're actually mitigated already just by managing it. You're really at no higher risk than anyone else as long as your levels have been well managed, which mine thankfully were. So the main risks with a gestational diabetes baby is that you can have a larger baby than normal. They call it macrosomic, I think, and it's basically a baby that's difficult to deliver because of their size. There's also a risk of shoulder dystocia where the baby gets stuck because their shoulders are too wide. And there's also a risk of the baby being born with low blood sugar. Now, because I'd had two previous births and both babies were fine, I was very confident that those risks were really minimal.
I can imagine. Now, when you talk of a water birth, like, is there a specific, pool, or is it like you bring in, you know, a jacuzzi or something with the power off, or like, is there a particular, what are you in as you give birth?
Well, we bought a specific birth pool online. Really, there's no rules. You could give birth in your bathtub if you wanted, but it probably wouldn't be the most comfortable place. We chose to buy a birth pool. You do have to be careful. Some people think you can just get any old paddling pool, but the plastics need to be safe for warm water, and it needs to be sturdy enough that you can lean on it and so on. So there are specific brands that sell birth pools, and we bought ours online. And then it comes with all these disposable elements. So it comes with a pool liner and a hose and a pump and everything that gets disposed of afterwards. So if we were to reuse the pool, we'd have to rebuy certain parts of it.
Yeah. Okay. Fascinating. And it's just you in the pool as you give birth. Obviously, then there's a new arrival, but those that are assisting you are around the pool.
They were, yes. Although the pool we bought was large enough that I told my husband if he wanted to get in, he could get in.
I can guess the answer to that one.
He was. Well, I told him, if I decide you're getting in the pool, you're getting in the pool. But thankfully, we didn't have time to discuss that because the baby came very quickly and I barely got in the pool myself.
Yeah. And you didn't take what would be described as traditional pain medication during the birth. How did you approach that side of things? Because you'd been there twice before, so you knew for the most part what to expect.
Yeah, so I did hypnobirthing classes with my first and second baby. And hypnobirthing as a concept is unbelievable. Women can practice that whether they're giving birth at home, in the hospital, in a birthing suite, wherever. And what that does is really helps prepare your mind for the experience of labour. So I went into it knowing that, you know, it wasn't going to be totally comfortable, but it was something that my body is designed to do. I had practiced breathing techniques. I used aromatherapy. The pool itself provides some level of pain relief. But mostly it's a case of mind over matter, I think, and telling yourself that your body is designed to do this. And it's not not like if you break your arm, the pain is there to tell you that something's wrong. Mm-hmm. When you're birthing a child, it's your body doing a natural physiological process. And I think a lot of the pain that we feel comes from our expectation of it being a painful event. Mm-hmm. And if you think, Greg, about when you see childbirth on TV, it's always a really medicalized setting where a woman's on a bed, maybe she's in stirrups and she's screaming. And that in itself, and the fact that in society, we only ever really hear horror stories about when birth goes wrong or mm-hmm. how painful it mm-hmm. is, or, you know, people almost revel in telling their horror stories about birth. So that, I think, adds to the experience for a lot of women. They go in expecting childbirth to be painful, mm-hmm. and therefore it is. I knew it wasn't going to be a breeze, don't get me wrong, and I said that when I told my birth story on Instagram. I said it doesn't tickle, you know, it is very intense, but you can do it. And I also had, there was gas and air at the house, so that was delivered around Christmas time, and it was here to be used, but unfortunately the midwives only made it to my birth about 8 minutes before the baby was born. So by that stage I had asked if I could have the gas and air, and they couldn't get it set up quick enough because he was already on his way. So
right, okay.
There are options.
Are you under the NHS or the HSE, sorry?
So I'm under the NHS. Okay. I'm in County Derry. So
understood, Alana.
We are the Western Trust.
Yeah.
But I do think there's a lot of similarities in terms of the process, because I was actually reading into that. You know, whether you're in the north or the south. I think the main thing, I didn't realise that home birth was an option, or that I could be supported by NHS midwives.
But the thing about it is it's not an option everywhere, because we knew we were going to have this conversation, and that people listening might go, right, you know what, that sounds like something I would go through. So we contacted the HSC and said, we're wondering if home births are available to families in Donegal at the moment. And their answer is a single line. Public Health Nursing Service Donegal does not provide a home birth service, be it, you know, in or out of the water for that matter, which is I think, really quite interesting, Alana, that you can avail of it in Derry, but your yeah. neighbour across the road in Donegal couldn't.
I do think that you can, and obviously this is developed, it depends on personal circumstances, but I believe there are private midwives available mm-hmm. in the south,
yeah.
which you can't actually hire in the north because they can't get insured to work in the north. So there are options available, but if you can't get it through the HSE, that's not very good, and people should be annoyed about that, because
okay.
it was, of all three of my births, it was the best experience that I've ever had. And my recovery so far has been wonderful. And I will be shouting this from the rooftops for the foreseeable, that I think anyone, as long as you don't have any immediate danger to yourself or your baby, and there's no medical need mm-hmm. for you to be in a hospital, I think everyone should consider a home birth and should yeah. be allowed the opportunity to consider a home birth.
I think so, Alana, and correct me if I'm wrong too. I think it kind of depends on the personality, because, you know, when you go in for scans or what have you, and the measurements are there, and it's a little bit smaller, or it's a little bit big, or you know, a lot of people get on edge with that, right? Because they're not familiar with the language yeah. or the bedside manner, and instantly go into, oh my God, is there something wrong mode? You know,
yeah.
So like the diabetes and pregnancy thing that you had, for a lot of people, it'd be like, oh my God, is everything going to go okay? But because you had experience of it, and you're pretty chilled about it, able to handle it with your diet, and I think maybe that kind of feeds into your wider character. Correct me at any point that I'm wrong. And I think, you know, a lot of these decisions come down to, you know, how confident the individual is in sort of going and understanding and working through that language and realising that they can still do a home birth,
yeah.
if any of that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it makes perfect sense. And I think that's partly why the first time I was pregnant and going through this, I didn't question what I was told by my healthcare providers when the consultant said my baby was measuring really big and I would struggle to deliver my baby. I was like, oh my goodness, book me in for that induction. I never questioned what negative side effects there could be of the induction, because you just trust wholeheartedly
and
that
as you
your
say,
care providers
they often
have
tell
your...
you, they often tell you that the baby might be big, and then they might tell you that later in their life they may be more susceptible to obesity, and you're hearing all these alarm bells going. All your alarm bells start to go dependent on your character, and then you go, right, I'm going to err completely on the side of caution. When we had our last baby, Alana, shortly after birth, it was he was induced as well because of the just I keep calling it pregnancy and diabetes because I ain't taking on the G word. Shortly after birth, effectively stopped breathing. And thank God for the amazing people down the road from us here. Got him into the ICU, and it was touch and go for a bit, and then miraculously, and it was a miracle, I feel. He just came out of it and was fine, started breathing on his own. Like, did you have any concerns that, God forbid, something happened post-birth? Are you assured that the midwives on hand sort of have the emergency stuff that might be required in such an incident?
Yeah, they bring and leave everything that they might need in an emergency at your home. So they used the word resuscitation quite a few times, and in your case that was obviously needed. But with my case, when I was pregnant, I found that quite anxiety inducing. But I knew that they had to go through all the risk factors, and they had to make sure that I was making an informed decision. And so it was quite scary at times to think about that. But when you have to take a step back sometimes and look at the bigger picture and the statistics, and everything that I'd already experienced was telling me that me and my baby were going to be fine. And worst case scenario, we are about 12 minutes from the nearest hospital in an ambulance if there was any need to transfer either myself or my baby in.
And I respect that, because I feel sometimes, generally speaking, sometimes I'm actually controlled by fear and catastrophizing and stuff like that there. And it's not really a very nice way to live your life. So I'm full of admiration that you're able to process that and work through it and do what worked out really well for you and your lovely family, Alana. And it's been really nice speaking to you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Greg.
Take care. Bye-bye. That's Alana Kerrigan there. Roma, sorry for holding you there. Roma, good morning.
Hello, Greg. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm just reading the introduction to you. What a mum. Okay, talk to me about your super mum.
So my mother obviously can't do the talking today because she's dementia, Greg. But her and my daddy met one. Mommy was 15 and daddy was 17. Mm-hmm. They got married when she was 17, and she had a baby every year since that, until obviously her last kid, Leone. She had all home births, 15 home births, and my sister Orla was a bit difficult, so they had to take her into hospital to be delivered because she had her cord around her neck. That was the only thing that sent Mommy to the hospital.
Wow.
All births were obviously the doctor was there and Nurse Feeney, I think it was at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have been Dr. Flaherty or Dr. Magner at the time were all my mother's. You know, they were present at all Mommy's 15th births in the house. So
how many children did your mom have?
My mommy had 19 children, all single births.
Wow. That's remarkable. That's literally a football team and subs.
But you know what, Greg? She loved it. She loved being a mommy, and to this day, it's the children that brighten her up. So there was something special about her, just.
For sure. Wow. I mean, literally gave her life to having and rearing children. That was what worked for her, what she wanted.
Yeah, 100% dedicated. Her and my father both, like, obviously. He was obviously part of the... You know, he was part of the good plan too. So he was always about the house when she was having her babies. You know, he would have been busy. There's one story about him wallpapering while she was in giving birth with my granny was there and the doctor. And they delivered one of my sisters at the time while he was out papering a wall. So,
well, you see, I suppose once it's happened so often, you kind of have to get on with things. You know, there's a new baby.
And
Are all your birthdays grouped or are they across the year or...?
We're all across the year. I mean, it's all stepping stones, so we're all just over a year apart.
Wow.
It was then the last my last sister, there was 2 years between them, obviously. There was a couple of miscarriages in there too, unfortunately. But you know what? She believed that what was for you wouldn't pass you, and she had her 19 children, and she was just happy, like I say, being at home and being with us all the time. And she really highly recommended the home birth, to be honest.
And did she have it in a bed, like it would have been that way rather than?
She had all her babies in a private room, obviously, with the doctor and the nurse, and maybe my granny would have been present at the time.
Yeah.
You know, so, she never complained. I never once heard her complain about anything, to be honest with you.
What an amazing woman. And she, where in the siblings do you sit, Roma?
I'm number 17, Greg, so I am. There's two more after me.
And?
But like I say.
When was the most people in the house, if you know what I mean? Like, you know, people move on and move out and stuff.
Yeah. So my older sister was married and had a set of twins before I was born. Mm-hmm. And then everybody else was in the house. So I'd say 17 at any one time were in the house together. Was my older sister then getting married when I was, my second older sister got married when I was 4, I think. So, yeah, there would have been 17 in the house at any one time.
Amazing, amazing story. What a way to grow up. What an experience to be reared amongst so many of your siblings.
Yeah, and you know what, Greg? It's like anything. It's the experience that makes you as a person, I think, because without that experience, sure, we'd be completely different. You know what I mean? I just think we're the type of people that just enjoy having the crack, you know, when we get together. And obviously, it's like any family. You have your ups and downs, but you get through it.
And the north,
you know what I mean, and it makes you stronger as a family.
And the North and South Koreas, it's like,
it's all just part of it.
Okay, it exactly.
Oh,
the
Daddy
same.
Would be the best. I think talking to you, Greg.
I'm from a large family, and my partner's family is. I thought like 13, 14 was big, but 19 is just something else. And busy house all of the time. It would have been hard to get time to yourself, which is not a bad thing either, Roma, don't get me wrong. But did you sort of go, oh my word, can I have 2 minutes to myself, please?
Do you know what I find now, though? I think we're all about the same. I can't really stick as much noise as I used to. So maybe that's a sign of, you know, how busy things were. So I know I like a bit of quiet time sometimes, but other than that, no, it was great, Greg, to be honest. I had great experience growing up, great parents. You know, Daddy worked hard. Mommy was great manager of money. She just, I don't know how they did it, but they did it, and they did it easy, if you know what I mean,
compared to,
you know, the way we all complain nowadays.
Yeah.
I mean, we all complain about silly things these days, but she didn't. She just got through it. I can remember standing up till 3-4 o'clock in the morning, like as I got older, using the twin tub at that time.
Yeah.
And washing, you know, clothes. And obviously, you get to an age where you helped her. And we took over the housework then from her. But unfortunately, she was young enough when she got sick. But she has been interviewed here before with you.
Right.
I think it was with John.
Okay.
And then she was on the paper. You know, she got an award for Ulster for Super Mum of the Year, like way back. So.
And
exactly.
Well, that's good, isn't it? It's good that her voice has been heard.
Yeah.
Pot cooking as well, too. Can you imagine preparing meals and what have you? I mean, everything, obviously, you know, you couldn't. Sometimes in our house, like, you find yourself making two or three different things. That was not the way it was when we were growing up. We all ate out of a pot and everyone had the same thing. And if you didn't eat it, you learned you had to eat it because there was no special provisions, because you simply couldn't because there's so many people.
No, you just had that way with food. Even anybody come into my house got fed. People can tell you stories about, you never left our home, no matter how many was in it, without a full stomach. Like, she just had this way of just making everybody feel at home.
Yeah. What an
I came across someone recently, an 87.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I came across an 87-year-old woman recently, just by chance, and she said, "Roma, I think we've met before." And I was like, "I don't know." And she says, "I came to your house years ago with some priest, to get shirts from your daddy." And she said, "And your mother made me a whole feed, and I left your house full to the brim." So that was nice too, Greg.
Lovely.
You know, just to see the amount of people she's impacted.
Yeah, and it's lovely, Roma, and it's so clear that you're able to speak of not just your mum, but your dad as well, with such warmth and respect. It's lovely, and it's the same with with my parents, thankfully. Roma, it's wonderful. What an amazing woman. What a legacy to leave behind. 19 children. And then, of course, the grandchildren, all that kind of stuff as well. It's wonderful. Pass on our best wishes to your mum as well. And we really appreciate you. And what a lovely tribute to her. And it's great that her story's been told in the past as well.
Do you know what? Childbirth just to mommy was, she used to take it in a stride, like I said. She believed, she used to always say to us when we were having our babies, then the apple will fall when it's ready. Mm. So, you know, she was very much, she would have had home births the whole way through. Unfortunately, my sister Orla led her to hospital. But you know what? Other than that, all was good. She had good experiences, and I suppose that's the main thing.
Amazing, amazing. Love to all, Roma. Thank you so much for your time. Take care.
All right. Yourself. Thank you, Greg. Thank
you. Take care. That's Roma Redden there. Her mother, and I can't imagine this is matched anywhere, really. 15 children born at home and 4 in hospital. And she won the title and retains the title of Super Mum. And lovely to hear, Roma. And what an amazing mum. And dad as well, too. Let's not forget dad's, too. Dad was there on one occasion wallpapering. I love that side of the story. But I suppose you get, you know, once you've been doing it for so long, you sort of become accustomed to it. In regards to the home birth, Private Midwives Ireland isn't available in Donegal, so it's not possible at all to have a home birth in the county with either Private Midwives or HSE Midwives. Obviously, that's someone who's looked into that. I wonder why Private Midwives Ireland don't offer that service in Donegal. Is there a reason to that? A lot of snow on McGrory's Brae. Not sure what it's like further on going to Donegal. So McGrory's Brae is between Ballybofey and Donegal Town. And it's where that road works is ongoing at the moment. So a listener who's been on the road telling us McGrory's Brae, a lot of snow there. I think now we're moving into the time, looking out the window, where we're going to start to see snow lying. So if you are out and about or on the roads, obviously be really careful. But if there's any information that it's useful for us to pass on to other motorists or road users, please let us know. Hopefully school runs in the afternoon and what have you aren't affected. But if there's any road information that you can share with us and we can share with our listeners, please let us know. Right across the region, by the way. Greg, to the person who said who should take the blame for the government, or should the government take blame for arson attacks, such a ridiculous statement. The only ones who are responsible for arson attacks are the person who deliberately starts the fire. That if someone or some people were inside the burning building, who's responsible then? But sometimes you wonder if people... You just see some commentary from people, and maybe it's just words that, you know, well, you know, this is a fight, or, you know, it's part of a bigger picture, almost as if someone could be collateral damage. How could you be fully sure there isn't a person, even a homeless person, seeking shelter in one of these premises? Do you know what I mean? I think people really need to, we can have the debates, have the discussions, have the arguments, but it just feels we need something of a reset in this country, and it's the same all over the place. That's a great story. 15 Waynes born at home. Imagine, please have more stories like this on. Yeah, we love the stories. And we also, too, put a call out. And just actually to remind you, last year we were looking for your unsung heroes. And we got loads of correspondence in on that. And we're going to start introducing some of those people over the course of this year as well. So look out and listen out for unsung heroes. Could we say, potentially, that Supermum, Ms. Redden, is our first unsung hero? I think she's a hero. I fought for a free bus pass. I also have epilepsy. When I threatened to sue them, I got my bus pass. Emma spoke with so much understanding and empathy and so eloquently. I want to say a big well done to her. Yeah, I really... We're talking to Emma about the SET hours in schools. It painted the scenario perfectly for me. Listen to the segment on seizures. So happy to hear this being spoken about on today's show. As someone who lives with someone who suffers, that suffers from seizures, it's a topic I feel is not spoken enough about. People try and hide it, and then there should be no shame about it, but awareness. Indeed. And again, I can't emphasize this enough, how important this statement I'm about to make is that if there are things like that that you believe you should hear more of, or, you know, that people don't understand, I'll give you an example. We were talking about Lyme's disease, and then we had a gentleman listening to us that was suffered from Addison's disease. And he messaged me on Facebook. He says, look, Greg, I would love an opportunity to talk about Addison's disease. Not a lot of people understand it. And there's only two of us in the county and a few of us in the country. Brilliant. So he came on and talked about it as well. So that's how interactive we are. So when I invite you to text or contact us, or if there's something you want to talk about or something you want us to talk about, it's not just a throwaway line at the start of the show. I mean it. And I'm delighted that this person felt that that topic was being discussed and it's helpful to them. And if you're out there and there's something that you want to talk about, please really feel free to contact us. We are your station and it's not just a tagline. That's exactly what we do here. Very disturbing the amount of buildings and premises that are being vandalised in our country right now. When and if some of the people who drive this hate agenda run for election, I hope the people give them a message. Back to seizures. Would the seizure possibly be related to stress? Could she relax her nervous system? It might be worth a try. Yep, she says that the triggers are tiredness, over-tiredness and stress. But I mean, if you're a mum and you're working and just going about general life does bring stress with it. So you can't avoid stress, really. You can try and manage it. And I think Laura does very well in relation to that, but you can't eliminate it either. But this caller says a small dose of Axiclam might reduce her anxiety and stress. It would be easier than an operation. She should consult her doctor. I worked in a hospital and noticed that anyone with anxiety was at a higher risk of seizure as the body is in high function. Indeed. Yeah, that does make sense. And I'm sure all medical options have been looked at there. I mean, with that, there comes, you know, you're going down another course of action. I'm not sure how that medicine might work with the anti-seizure measure and so on and so forth. But I really appreciate you getting in touch. I was born with epilepsy. It's over 10 years from the last one. No doctor can tell me when anyone will have one. So you had a seizure 10 years ago. Are you on medication? Maybe that talks to the fact that your body works well with the medication that you have. Right, let's take a break. Our next guest about to join us. Right, you're very welcome back to the programme. And we're joined on it now by Mary Herlihy, who's manager of the Donegal Women's Centre. And we're talking about an event that's coming up ahead of the referendums on family and care on the 8th of March. Now, this is a point of view coming from one particular standpoint, but we're keeping a close eye on this topic, of course. And whilst it's not always easy to deliver a balance in every single interview, in the round, we are keeping a close eye on that to ensure that balance is given to both sides of the arguments as best as possible. But as I say, we want to be able to have conversations as well without it always being... Anyway, it'll be fine in the long run. Mary Herlihy, manager of the Donegal Women's Centre. So the event is taking place this Friday at 11 a.m. And what's the purpose of this meeting?
Yes, thank you, Greg, and thanks for having me on this morning. The purpose is really, it's an information session. So it's an opportunity for the public, because it's an open invitation to come along and hear information that is, that is balanced, that will inform people on how, on what the referendum means, what the changes are, what it means for them if they've got any concerns. So we have a panel of speakers there that will look at it from each side and every side, and maybe some issues that haven't come up or haven't been spoken about publicly. So it's really just kind of a get together just to share information. So we won't be pressing for a yet. Well, obviously the National Women's Council of Ireland are very publicly coming out with a Yes Yes campaign. That's not the purpose of tomorrow. The purpose is to give the information and to allow the attendees to make an informed decision on how they would like to vote on the 8th of March.
Yeah. The problem with this referendi, and it's probably not unique to these either, it's not actually the wording of what we're voting on or what we're voting on. It's the unknown. It's the subsequent application, interpretation, challenges to it. So to some extent, yes, we can have informed debates, but to a great extent, we can't, because you really could approach this. You could approach this referenda and sort of talk about what might happen after the fact to suit your point of view or your narrative or your state of mind, and which is somewhat unfortunate, or maybe that's just the reality of life.
That's probably the reality of it. And I think there's been so little discussion around this referendum on both of them that I think there's a lot of misinformation, there's an awful lot of confusion. And this started with a conversation with ourselves here in the centre, from me talking to friends about what they knew, how they thought they were going to vote. And we all realised actually we have very little information. So we have very little information around the referendum itself, you know, what the impact or the consequence of voting yes or no will look like going forward. I know that the wording isn't really, is going to be an issue for some people, you know, and what would that mean? And I think the likes of the conversation starting tomorrow will just bring those out into the open, get people talking about it.
Yeah, because even just on one issue, which feeds into conversations we have on a regular basis in various, is this, you know, removing or diluting a woman's place in the Constitution? Now, there are two arguments to that that can be very forcibly made and both kind of right. And that's just in one tiny icky-picky element of this, and therein lies the problem. Informed decisions, though, informed opinions, because I think there are those I think there's someone listening here that has an opinion and they might think no aligns to that opinion, and they might actually think yes aligns to that opinion in both referendums.
And that's the reality, and that's, I suppose, being a democracy as well, is that, you know, if you look at this and you don't really like it and it's not for you, or you don't agree with it, you have the right to vote no. Equally, you know, on the other side, if this is something that's going to impact you, you think this is a positive move forward, that this is broadening out, you know, what a family looks like. The woman is still mentioned in the Constitution on other occasions. Mother is still mentioned there, you know, so it's not taking it away. I think what we're looking at is broadening out and to be more inclusive, that, you know, it's the language that's important, because there's a lot of stay-at-home dads here at the moment as well. You've got same-sex marriages. You know, there's, I suppose, society has changed, the family. As
I think part of it too is, you know, we're here, we are now having a referendum. And this doesn't talk to a yes or no, but who's driving for this? Like, you know, I was a single parent father, but I didn't think, oh my God, I need to be recognised in the you know, and people weren't contacting me saying, right, we need to get together now and campaign to the government to change this because we don't think dads are being recognised here. You know, thruples aren't sort of saying, you know, we need a referendum now because we want ours to be classed as a meaningful relationship. Now, the referendum in itself wouldn't determine that, but some are arguing that that's what it could. Like, so who is campaigning and seeking this sort of change in language and inclusivity and or even the removal of our reference to women, if not the total removal of it? I think that's what kind of has a lot of people sort of saying, well, what's the motivation for this? What is the problem here that we're trying to fix?
Yeah, and that's really good. And that's part of the confusion, because nobody, you know, we're not all clear about where it came from. My understanding, my own personal understanding, is that it came from the Citizens Assembly, and looking at the role of women in society and looking at the role that women has changed since the Constitution, you know, was written. And about women's role in society, women's role within the home and outside of the home. And I think following on from that, then, it just, you know, it's to broaden out, to include other families, to include loaned parents, to include, you know, moms who are parenting on their own. So it's to be more inclusive of the society that we're currently living in, without necessarily being detrimental to women or to mothers in the home. And that's what tomorrow is about. You know, where did it come from? How did this happen? How did we get here? And why are we doing this? And that's the conversations we'll be having tomorrow as well, just looking at all of that.
Yeah, because a lot in this country's against women, representation, work, employment opportunities, healthcare is anti-women. And it some might say, well, it seems to recognise that to some extent. To remove a reference to women in particular would seem counterintuitive. That's not me saying that's an opinion, but that's part of the debate. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's two sides to that, because, you know, we can look at it and say, well, we're not looking at women just being in the home. We're looking at them, you know, their work, their contribution to society outside of the home. And equally, we're looking at their contribution that they give within the home. You know, because many women choose for, or maybe not choose, but they end up being carers in the home. And it's to give, you know, legitimacy to that as well as a woman being outside. and having a career and working and doing other activities outside of the house. So it's trying to be inclusive. Again, you know, that's my understanding of it. I think tomorrow will be great because there'll be another debate about that. You know, there'll be more information. I'll be challenged. We'll all be challenging each other, coming from different sides. And that was really where the where it all came from, because people had different opinions. I heard this, I heard that.
And people need to step out of the echo chamber, really. You know, it's so important. Again, I sound like a scratched record, but, you know, it's good to go into a room like this and say half the panel, yeah, you're right, half the panel, you're wrong, but you do said something that, you know, resonates. Okay, so people just roll up to the Donegal Women's Centre tomorrow morning at 11 a.m.?
So we're going to have a panel of speakers, Rachel Coyle and Catherine Lane from the National Women's Council of Ireland, and they have obviously come out, and we've no issue with that. They're going for the SES campaign. We have Patricia Blee from the Family Carers Ireland, so she's coming along to give her contribution. And then we have Siobhan Cullen, who is also our chairperson, but is a family law lecturer. And Siobhan is going to chair the debate and really kind of play almost devil's advocate, you know, for everything that's put forward, and maybe say, okay, well, what's the other side of this? You know, how can we look at it differently? You know, exactly the points that you brought up. Yeah. Are we, you know, discriminating? Are we eliminating women from the constitution? So it's to have that balance, that over and back. And then hopefully the purpose is really for women, our people, those who attend tomorrow, to leave more informed and say, actually, I'm quite comfortable, and I know how I'm going to vote, or say, actually, I need more information. You know, and we might do other events then.
All right, Mary, listen, thank you very much for that. It's at 11 o'clock tomorrow in the Donegal Women's Centre. Have a lovely day. Richard Hogan's a writer and psychotherapist at the Therapy Institute. Good morning to you, Richard.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, now, you are behind a petition. What are you asking people to sign?
I am indeed. For too long now, Greg, I've sat in my clinic and I work with families for many years, and I've worked in schools and I sit in a national advisory council. So I'm with parents in schools every day, and I talk in schools every week. And I'm asking parents that we come together and we go to the government and say enough is enough of our children consuming hardcore extreme materials. Currently, there are no safeguards in place to protect our children from consuming very damaging images, and they are damaging. And so what I'm looking for is parents to go onto my Instagram, sign the petition. I'm going to Leinster House next week, and I'm going to be bringing this to the government. I want them to finally bring in safeguards and take the safety of our children very seriously, because we know psychologically children who consume hardcore extreme material, it changes their brain structures, it makes them more impulsive, and it can create very, very pathological ideas, particularly boys towards girls. We just need to stop it, because currently, Greg, a child can go on there at 5 years of age or 6 years of age, and you see all the stats there about kids at that age getting smartphones, which is, you know, very dangerous, but that they can consume hardcore material. I've been in a school there last year where a senior infant had consumed extreme material. Now, that is dystopian stuff, and we need to put safeguards in there, because we can't allow these platforms regulate themselves. They don't want less traffic. They want more traffic, and so we have to step in there.
They don't care, Richard, but what the solution to this? The solution to this, the greatest...
Well, you know,
Richard, I'll just put the question to you. The solution to this, the greatest resistance will probably come from adults who are supposed to care for children. The obvious solution here is photographic ID to be used to access sites to ensure people are of an age to go on TikTok, to go on X, to go on websites that offer pornography. Like, the government might go, yeah, we would do that, but you know where the resistance is going to come from? It's going to come from the general public, who will argue that, oh, well, you're trying to steal our identity or track us or blah, blah, blah. You know, the children won't be put first by probably the general population.
You know, you're right, Greg. The greatest resistance will come from, I think, probably the platforms themselves in some ways. But yes, I think as a society, we probably have a relaxed view and think this is just like normal satiating of sexual curiosity. And of course, sexual curiosity, that's normality. That's normal. There's nothing wrong with that. But it's what they're using to satiate it. And people will say, well, it's a nanny state, and you're taking too much control from us. And And I would say, well, no, you know, the state doesn't allow our children to drink alcohol, and the state, you know, has laws against our children vaping and our children driving with drink and any of us. So we have laws to protect society. And these things are, this is a real silent ill in our society, as I see it, working with families and couples as well, but with children. And it's like, yeah, it's very easily fixed. If we want our children to stop consuming them, all we have to do is put in, you know, verification of your age with picture photograph. We have loads of, we have huge potential with AI to make this stuff really easy and, you know, and doable. And so it's a quick fix. We can do it if we want, but the political will has to be there.
And the thing is, too, I mean, it's not perfect, but in terms of technology and protecting children, PlayStation have achieved it. Sony have achieved it. Microsoft have achieved it through the Xbox.
It's achievable.
They can filter out language. You can be flagged for bullying. I mean, obviously, then you can go into another space and there's potential for grooming. But the point being is that industries that actually rely on monetizing our children have found a way to get almost there in protecting them. It's not perfect, but they have. Adults want their space left alone, but that's where the problems, that's where the children are being exploited, exposed, and having, you know, women having, girls having unreal expectations of them, fellas having unreal expectations of women, you know, like...
Intimacy. Yeah.
Exactly, intimacy, and what is and what isn't, and all the crap that they see. And when you see, right, when you see what the top searches are in this country, and they're released, it's public, stepsister, stepfathers, all that kind of stuff, young, old, it's crazy. And we know because Pornhub released that stuff themselves annually. There's a serious problem.
There is a serious problem. And this is what I'm trying to say to people, is that I'm not a prude, you know. I'm not a prude. But I have three daughters myself, and I work with teenage boys a lot and younger boys. And I see, you know, and I hear them talking. And I actually, Greg, I have a lot of teenage boys who come to me because they hear me talking publicly because I have a platform, which I'm lucky to have, you know. And they hear me talking about it. They come to me trying to get off pornography because it's addictive. And it's not like they're satiating it with kind of normal curiosity. They're satiating that sexual curiosity with like hardcore, extreme material. That's the nature of pornography today. That's why I'm so against it. And that's why I'm so strong on this. And I think we need to stand up as a society and say, look, that's damaging children. We want our boys to have healthy ideas. And we want them to love themselves. We want our girls to love themselves and respect themselves and understand what intimacy is. Because what you described there, that's not intimacy. That's a warped view of intimacy. And that's actually acting. And actually, when you analyze it even further, that promotes sex trafficking. And so it's like, you know, we have to understand what this thing, you know, what this thing actually really is.
In the last 20 seconds, sorry, Richard, if people are of like mind, how do they sign your petition?
Yeah, thanks, Greg. If they go onto my Instagram, official Richard Hogan, you'll see it there. You'll be able to sign it.
Okay, simple as that. All right, thank you very much for your time. Richard Hogan there, writer and psychotherapist at the Therapy Institute. We're back with you tomorrow morning at 9. Have a lovely Thursday. Be careful. The roads, we're getting reports of the roads becoming more dangerous in different parts of the region. So if you are out and about, allow extra time and be careful. Have a lovely day.